The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Before I say hi to you, C wants to know, Howard, can I ask you, where are all the human rights lawyers? So it's actually very interesting, C, when we're talking about Novak Djokovic, and I happen to think that the way he's been handled and the way he's being treated is appalling. I am not, as you know, I'm a very, very pro, strongly pro-vaxxer, but it doesn't mean that we need to lose our minds completely over this. And I do feel that to some extent, Australia and certainly many of us here have lost our minds over this. And I do think that there's a different way to be handling it. So yes, there should be human rights lawyers involved. This should be a case that really examines how we treat this. Let's put that aside. Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Okay, Tov, yes, we are also battling lots of different issues on the COVID front. We'll talk about that shortly. But before we dive into issues of COVID, just a couple of snippets of information, little stories that have happened over the last day or two. First of all, we're sad to announce the death of Aura Herzog. She was the mother of our current president, Isaac Herzog, and also the wife of a former president, Chaim Herzog. So she died on Sunday evening at the age of 97. A very interesting lady. Her family were expelled from Jaffa and went to live in Egypt where she was born. And then she, interestingly, I don't know if people know this, but she actually has a degree in maths and physics from Wits University in South Africa before immigrating to Israel in 1946. She obviously was the wife of the president and now most recently also the mother of a president. So she will be buried alongside her late husband on Mount Herzl, which is the acre reserved for Israel's former leaders, and she will be laid to rest there. Israel felt the effects of an earthquake that occurred in Cyprus overnight last night, 6.4 on the Richter scale, which is quite a substantial size earthquake. It was measured at a depth of 2 kilometers just off the coast of Cyprus. Was felt in Israel and in a number of different cities in the night. No damage reports, no injuries reported. But 6.4, I think, is something to be a little concerned about. No tsunami warnings as well.
Incredible.
That was the earthquake that we felt last night. And yeah, now we can go on to talk about COVID issues, which unfortunately continue to dominate our headlines. The first thing which is worth mentioning is that our foreign minister, Yair Lapid, has tested positive for coronavirus. He came out with a little rhyming statement in Hebrew, which I will repeat and then translate. And he said, "Ani margish mitsuyan ki ani mechusan." I feel fantastic because I am vaccinated. That is
brilliant. Brilliant.
That's in the words of Yair Lapid, our foreign minister, who has gone into isolation. The Israeli government really struggling to control the outbreak of Omicron. Still many predictions that up to 40 or 50% of Israel will ultimately be infected by this particular wave. And it is certainly sweeping through Israel at a rate of knots. And the latest numbers on a daily, the daily number of infections stands at 32,000. Before the Omicron wave, the record was, I think, at around 11,000 per day. We've now almost tripled that record daily number of infections to 32,000. And it doesn't look like it's going to come down from there anytime soon. So many, many infections, people trying to deal with the huge number of people who were in quarantine. The latest rule change is that the quarantine period for those people who have been infected by corona, who have been actually tested positive, has been shortened from 10 days to the current 7 days. So now people who have received a positive test, which by the way is not an easy thing to do because getting tested is also quite a mission with the number of people, the huge...
Because of the numbers, right.
The huge number of people who are trying to be tested. So getting tested is also quite a mission. Most people now opting for the home antigen test, which seems to be the easiest thing to do. And yet even that's not so easy, because getting the product, being able to buy the home antigen test, is still not easy. There is so much demand for it. The Prime Minister has said that Israel will have a massive number of new tests coming into the country within the next few days. So he's asked people to be patient and wait for the arrival of these tests, amongst other things, just to show some patients across the board. But now people who have tested positive will be required to isolate for only 7 days, which means that there are some people who are coming out of that 7-day period who are still showing positive tests, but who are theoretically allowed to go back to their regular daily routines. I'm not quite sure how that works, but this is really just an attempt to try to free up the number of people who are out there suffering in quarantine. And for those people who wish to travel to South Africa, a new website has been put up by tourism ministry, and the website for those people who are interested, just to have a look in and see what the latest rules are for travelers coming to Israel, go to https://safe.israel.travel. safe.israel.travel. No www, just https://safe.israel.travel. And there you should be able to find all the information that you need about traveling to Israel, what's needed for you to come here, what you will need to do while you are here, and of course what happens before you leave. And there's a section called planning your trip, there's a section called during your stay, and there's a section called before you leave us. So those are the rules for foreign travelers who are wishing to come to Israel. Do make sure that you have a valid certificate of vaccination. That is a requirement. Going back to our original the original comments about what's going on in Australia with Novak Djokovic right now, you are required to be vaccinated to come to Israel, which I think is a fairly standard requirement being implemented across the board. The question is, of course, what are the exemptions? You should be able to find all of that on the website. That's where you find it. So yeah, we're still very much struggling. Many people working from home, quite quiet generally around the Israeli economy, in spite of the fact that everything remains officially open, but still a battle ahead of us, and we don't quite see the light at the end of the tunnel yet.
Right. And C says, how shouldn't you be in quarantine? Well, actually, I am. Until I know what this croaky voice is about, I most certainly will be in quarantine because I certainly don't want to take a chance of affecting anybody else. So, yep, that's exactly what we do have to do, unfortunately, whether it's convenient or not. All right, Anthony, some of the other big stories in Israel, the new citizenship law. Let's just talk about that.
This is a highly controversial law that is now being passed by the ministerial committee, which has approved this law to go forward to the Knesset. Just to remind people of where this comes from, this was originally a law that was implemented in 2003 at the height of the second intifada in an attempt to try to prevent terror attacks. That was really the main driver behind this law. And the law effectively barred Palestinians who were married to Israelis from being able to obtain permanent residency in Israel. So those people who were effectively trying to use marriage as a tool to gain permanent residency in Israel were barred from doing so by this law. Now, there were later exceptions that were carved out for some spouses who were able to receive a permit that did give them residency in Israel, but potentially not a lot else. They didn't give them rights to any of the social benefits or anything else that a resident ordinarily might receive in Israel. So initially it prevented them from residency. Then ultimately there were some exceptions implemented where residency was allowed, but not much else. And the law was hugely controversial even from the outset. And there were rights groups who came out charging that this was discrimination against Palestinians, against Arab Israelis. And in fact, this was brought to the Supreme Court in 2012 after a protracted legal battle. And the Supreme Court actually upheld the law in a very, very marginal 6-5 decision of the full bench of the Supreme Court. The court decided that the law actually was legal and could be upheld, which was an interesting decision by the Supreme Court, because at that point the Supreme Court was actually ruling many times against government and against some of these laws that the government was passing. But that particular law did pass the scrutiny of Israel's Supreme Court. The issue was that this law had to be renewed every year by the Knesset. So it was one of those laws that wasn't permanently on the statute book, but it was only valid so long as the Knesset renewed it on an annual basis. And at the last time that this law came up for renewal, it wasn't renewed. It simply expired because the government was in such a state of disarray, the Knesset was in such a state of disarray, that they were not able to renew this law, and so it effectively lapsed. Mm-hmm. And now the government has decided that they would like to re-implement it. Interestingly, not the Likud government now. This is now, of course, the Naftali Bennett, Yair Lapid government, which has decided, in the form particularly of Ayelet Shaked, who feels that this law needs to be on the statute book, and she's brought it back for approval by the ministerial committee, which actually the cabinet ministers did give it their approval, which was, I think, quite interesting in itself, given the very, very colorful makeup of the cabinet and of the government at the moment, with the varied parties involved. We do understand that if it is brought to the Knesset, which is the plan, that Meretz won't vote in favor of it, and the joint Arab list, but all of those parties that are part of the government have decided that they will not vote in favor of this if it's brought to the Knesset. But there is a reasonable chance that the opposition may well support it in the form of the Likud, because this was their law to begin with. So it makes sense that they would wish to support it. Highly controversial. It's going to be interesting to see what goes down when this is brought to the Knesset.
Yeah, absolutely, it really will. And finally, Israel will bring a resolution to the United Nations General Assembly later this month, combating Holocaust denial.
I just wondered to myself why in this day and age we still need to do this. Things like this. Yeah, why? I mean, is it not, you know, we're so past this whole issue of denying. So many years have passed, so much evidence. I can't believe that there are still people around today who deny the Holocaust and then actually have supporters. People actually think that what they're saying makes any sense. It's just inconceivable to me that this is needed, but apparently it is. And I just wonder as well, and perhaps listeners out there might join in this conversation, I just wonder whether as time goes by and as the witnesses, the eyewitnesses to the Holocaust die out, whether this is going to become more and more of a thing. But the idea is to bring this resolution to the General Assembly. Gilad Erdan, who is Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, is spearheading this particular initiative to bring a resolution which will provide, first of all, a specific classification for Holocaust denial. We already have a definition which has been put forward by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance for the Holocaust. We already have all of those definitions in place, which are relatively widely accepted and understood. And so the signatory countries to this particular resolution will be required to demand that social media networks remove posts that fall under that definition of Holocaust denial, and that various actions will need to be taken by signatory countries in order to combat all manner of Holocaust denial. Now, we already know how difficult it is to combat social media. It's so widespread. We don't necessarily have the support of the websites themselves, of the companies that run these social media websites and portals. But the signatory countries will be obliged to take action on this. And the idea is that the vote will be brought on January the 20th, which will be the 80th anniversary this year of the Wannsee Conference, which was that conference organized by the Nazis in order to begin the implementation of Hitler's final solution. So I think it's a very pertinent date that this vote will be brought, and it will be interesting to see how it goes down in the General Assembly of the United Nations, it is expected that it will be passed overwhelmingly. I certainly hope so. There seems to me to be no reason why this should not be an absolute yes with a big Y, no issues. This is really something which is unacceptable in its current form, the anti-Semitism that is generated as a result of Holocaust denial. So we definitely want to see that passing through. And, of course, we want to see the signatory countries taking the action that's required in order to prevent Holocaust denial in their local areas. But I'm interested to hear if people have a view on this.
Well, I just wonder what will happen with a country like Iran, who we know peddle this quite strongly, Holocaust denial.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, we know that Iran certainly peddles it and uses it to try to further its causes. It should, in my opinion, bring Iran into further disrepute rather than help Iran's cause and help them to justify things that they do in the international community. So we can sort of set Iran aside almost as an exception to this particular rule, because, you know, one would like to think that in the most part, countries around the world have some logic that they would apply to things like this, and that if they're going to make public statements, that they would like to gain some credibility from those public statements rather than lose credibility in the international arena. So, to me, it just seems obvious. It seems like a shoe-in. It seems like nobody should even have to think twice about this. So let's hope that others will see it in the same way.
Absolutely right. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. It has just gone 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 High FM. Good morning.